Well, Merry Christmas Eve, Eve, and this is a great time of the year. So we have been doing here at Quest this season a series called Making Room, and it's really our theme for the holidays. And so in that whole process, we really tried to wrestle with what does it mean on the externals or externally to what to do, how to make room in our lives externally. And so it gets really busy, doesn't it? It gets kind of crazy, this event and that event. And then all of a sudden, there's events you didn't know about you're supposed to be at. And then you throw on something and go to that. And it just externally, it gets a little crazy. And sometimes you just need some space. And so encouraging you, encouraging ourselves to make a little space, and that's not easy to do. And sometimes you can't do it at all, and so it really focuses then on even making space internally. So what do you do on the inside of you to make space? How do you create an area in your own soul, a quietness, a place there to really make room for Christmas? And so we've been talking about those things, and so... The first week we talked about making room for others in our lives, other people. So easy to get wrapped up in all the things of life and all the activities and the stuff of life, but sometimes we miss the people. And so Jonathan talks so clearly about making room, where Jesus was brought that guy. Remember, he talked about the paralytic, and they were bringing this paralytic to Jesus, and there was no room to get in the house. And so they went up on the roof and they tore it off. They tore the whole roof off and they lowered this guy down to make room for this guy in the life of Christ, to bring him into the presence of Christ. And that was what they were really all about, because they knew something special was going to happen. And so do we do that for others, to really help them not just make room for each other, but to make room for other people in the presence of Christ? Now, that was really an important week, I think. And then the next week, 2 weeks ago, we talked about dealing with the unexpected, making room for the unexpected, and really the unexpected, on the most part, on the disappointing, the things that are hard, the things that are difficult, things we didn't anticipate, things we didn't ask for, things that just kind of barge into our lives, rudely as they are, and you think, oh my gosh, how do I make room for this? And realizing we live in a broken world, and the fact that God is bigger than them, and he wants to use everything together for good, for those who love him and are called according to his purpose, that he will use those things. Not always in the short run, right? Sometimes those things that happen are painful in the short run. They're almost devastating. Sometimes they feel like you will not recover from some of these things in our lives. And yet God has the ability to use it if we bring him into it. If we love him and are called according to his purpose, he will work those things together for good. Now, we look forward to the day that there'll be no more pain and no more tears. And no more wrong. We look forward to that day. But guess what? It's not in this world, right? It's not going to happen here. And so you have to really kind of put on your big boy pants and your big girl pants and say, okay, I'm going to take on life. And I'm going to trust God in the midst of it. And we're going to deal with this. You know, that sometimes difficult things, they're an opportunity. I just sat down with a couple this past week, and they were going through some very difficult things. And I said, you know, you'll make it through. You're going to make it through this. But the goal isn't simply to make it through, right? The goal is to do something with it, to understand that maybe God is involved and he can do something about this. And I don't know when or exactly how, but he'll work. Don't just make it through, but do something valuable with it. So we talked about then making room for the unexpected. And then we talked about this last week, about making room for forgiveness. And I want to just make a few comments about that to maybe clarify or maybe go one more step in this area of what it means to make room for forgiveness. Because we said this, because it is the core quality of God's character that we are intended to experience and to replicate. Now let me just hang there for a second. At the very core of the gospel, it is God willing to forgive. It's not a sidelight. It's not a kind of an add-on. It's the core of it, that he wants us to experience his forgiveness. And he wants us, therefore, to replicate it, to pass it on, to pay it forward, in a sense, that he wants other people to experience it. And here's the deal. Forgiveness is this. It is giving up the right to hurt someone because they've hurt us. It is giving up the right to hurt someone simply because they hurt us. And you decide to put it aside and not do it. Now, let me just add a thought here at the bottom. And in fact, it's not just in, in white here. Let's make it in red. Let's make it a big deal, okay? Here's the deal. Forgiveness sets the table for the possibility of rebuilding trust and experiencing reconciliation. Forgiveness sets the table. Forgiveness and trusting them again is not the same thing. Those are different. Okay? When you forgive, you don't have to automatically trust, because there are people who have hurt you that actually are not worthy of your trust. You don't have to trust them again. But until you forgive them, there is no way to even get to trusting them and to reconciling the relationship. If you are unwilling to forgive, you'll never get there, ever. Now, so you start with forgiveness, letting it go, letting the vengeance be God's in all of it. And you say, I'm not going to take that role. I am going to forgive. I'm going to let it go. I'm not going to hurt them simply for hurting me. But that doesn't mean they're trustworthy. That has to be rebuilt over a period of time. Because really, trust comes from truth, right? Truth. You call it like it is, you call it out, and you forgive. Then you can rebuild trust. And from trust comes actual, mature, and mutual love. But you have to start with forgiveness. It sets the table. And then you may say, I've forgiven, but they are not trustworthy, so I'm not going to trust them with certain things. Because that's a whole other step. It's a whole other part of it. But to forgive reflects the nature of God himself, right? So whenever I do a wedding, I always remind them that we were called to reflect the image of Christ in our lives and in each other's lives and to each other. And no greater relationship than husband and wife to be able to do that. And we want to reflect ourselves in a couple of different ways. Well, first of all, is to offer forgiveness. That's a key piece of being of any relationship, to offer forgiveness. The second one that I remind them in a wedding is that they need to be people who keep their promises, because that's what God is like. God is a person who has made his promises, and he's keeping every one of them. And when we get married, you make these promises, and keeping those promises reflects what God is like. But forgiveness is one of them. He wants us to experience it, to replicate it. We want to be able to not strike back, but to forgive and set the table for what could be building trust and reconciliation. Okay? So, if you are going to make room for others, if you're going to make room for the unexpected, if you're going to make room for forgiveness, then you have to make room for the presence of God. You have to make room for his presence. Because the only thing that makes sense to value others is to recognize that they were made in the image of God, that they have inherent value. They're important. All the other things of this world are going to go away someday. Every one of them, except for people. Except for the human soul is eternal. These people are eternal. It's amazing. And until we recognize that, then we do all sorts of things with people to devalue life. But we have to understand that it is that when we make room for the presence of God, we automatically make room for other people, right? If we're going to make room for the presence of God, then we understand that the unexpected is going to happen, and that God is bigger than that. That the tapestry of our lives sometimes looks like the back of a tapestry, right? My wife right now is making, she's sewing, needlepointing a stocking for our son-in-law. It's been a couple of years in the making, but he will get there, you know? And the front of it looks beautiful. And the backside of it has loose strings going all over the place. It's crazy, right? And guess what? God is doing in our lives is the front of this tapestry, of this needlepoint. But from our point of view, it looks like the backside of it, right? It's a little ragged. But God is doing something, even in the unexpected. And that God is doing something in this area of forgiveness. It is like him to forgive. So, you guys, as I was preparing for today, this is a little bit of a sidelight, but I thought, wow, this is important. As people try to make room for God in their lives, look at these statistics. 50% of people who make a decision, this is in America, 50% of people who make a decision to entrust their lives to Christ do so before their 14th birthday. 50%. before they're 14. We call it the 4-14 window. That means from 4 years old to 14 years old, 50% of all the people who will ever entrust their life to Christ do it in that period of time. So what's the duh? The duh is this thing called kids ministry and student ministries is profoundly important. You see, what it says is that this period of life in your kids from 4 to 14 is incredibly foundational, right? It's so important for them to be engaged with life and with you and with the gospel. It's incredibly important. Look at this. 64% of all people who will entrust their lives to Christ will do so before their 18th birthday. That's two-thirds. So then you think, oh my gosh, what are we doing ministering to all these adults? You know, we ought to just say, forget you guys, adults, you know, you're done. You know, and we're going to do all of it with the kids. Guess what we're trying to do with adults is make sure you don't lose your faith. And there's fully a third that will come to faith after the age of 18. Fully a third. So it's really important. And we're trying to say, let's not lose our faith, because in this journey called life, sometimes it's easy to have our faith beaten out of us. And so we're trying to say, let's not lose that faith, because when you keep your faith, you'll then pass it on to kids that are between 4 and 18. And so it's really important. So here's what I think the bottom line. Young people, they're making foundational decisions concerning what their lives are going to be all about. And guess what? These kids, they're smart. They're intelligent. They get it. They're not brainless. Young people think through things very clearly. And it's really important that they add into their worldview, into their paradigm of life and truth, the reality that there is a God and He is there. For me, it happened when I was young. It happened when I was in seventh grade. Seventh grade was 12 years old. You think, oh, a 12-year-old. Guess what? I was thinking through these issues. When I had a friend, one of my best friends, who was a wrestler, he's on the track team. That's what wrestlers do, right? And they're out on the track team, and he died of a heart attack during practice. And as a 12-year-old, I had to ask the question, what in the world is that all about? And then at the end of the day, I think I was thinking, if he could die, I could die. And if I die, what is life all about? And I had no answer for it. And then when I was in ninth grade, when one of my best friends, who'd gotten involved in the early form of the drug culture, was shot and killed as he robbed a store to support his drug habit, I began to think, wow, I was right on the edge of either going that way with Dave or another direction doing something else. And I didn't know which way to go. I was just 14 years old. And I'm thinking through these things, because they can do that. And then I began to get involved in this campus ministry called Young Life, and they began to talk to me about Christ. And it made sense. And as a 15-year-old, I gave my life to Christ. And ever since, people have been investing in me to help me not lose that faith. But see, as we make room for God, these young people are so important. But also you as an adult. Because adults have already filled their lives with all sorts of things to find it more difficult, and we find it more difficult to kind of rearrange, right? As we get older, somehow even the messed up priorities and paradigms that we have in life, we have a hard time changing them. God can change it, but it just seems harder the older we get, because we get kind of stuck in our ways. But we need to make room for God in our lives, I think. So let me just say this. For today, I want to talk a little bit about making room for God Himself in our lives. And I'd like to talk about this, is that even when you're afraid, and even when it is not yet, I'll explain what that means as we go along. Even when you're afraid, and even when it is not yet. And I think it's going to be illustrated by these two groups connected to the birth of Christ, okay? We're going to just kind of illustrate it in two groups. Now, let's look at this picture first of all. So, yeah. So you guys, this past week I was driving by some different churches, and there's this one church that's got this beautiful nativity scene out front. It's almost life size. I mean, it's like people are regular size. It's giant. It's beautiful. It's awesome. Now we just kind of shrink that down, right? And we bring these into our home, and it looks like something like this, right? And so I began to wonder, if I were to stand in front of that church with that beautiful nativity, or if I were to take someone into your home or my home and look at my nativity, what would Jesus say? What would he have anything to say about this? And I think he would. For example, he'd say, hey, who's the dude with wings? Who's the dude with wings? And I'd say, well, that's an angel. And he'd say, angels don't have wings. I go, really? Yeah, cherubim and seraphim, which are kind of a form of an angel, or kind of a class, but the regular everyday angel, like the angels, that they don't have wings. I go, oh, I don't, wow. He goes, well, why is he dressed in white? Well, I don't know, because, I don't know, angels wear white, right? And he goes, no, that's not exactly always true. So, okay, well, here we are with an angel. So let's just block her out, or him out. He doesn't belong there. And just so you know, the angel, he appeared to the shepherds, right? But there are no record of the angels being at the birth site. None. Says they all went back into heaven after they talked to the shepherds. They didn't come to the birth site. They weren't there. Okay? So, how about, and then I think he'd say, Jesus would say, hey, who are those three guys on the right? Who are those dudes? And he'd go, well, those are the wise men. He goes, they weren't there. They didn't come to the birth. They didn't come for a couple of more years. You know, they came later when we were living in a house and I was a toddler. They didn't come to the birth site. Really? Yeah, they weren't even there. And you go, oh, bummer. So, you know, so let's block them out, okay? They weren't there. They're not part of the story yet, okay? They weren't at the birth site. So when we set up our nativity at home every year, there are some years I take the wise men and I stick them on the other side of the room, you know? I put them over on the other side. And Diane's always like, oh my gosh, you put those things back, will you? Now, if I was really going to do it right, I would either put them in another room, or really, actually, accurately, I would take them to the neighbor's house. You know, I would take them way down the street and let them, and then we just exchange wise men. You know, and then every other day or so, we would just move the wise men closer to your house, into the next house. You know, we just keep moving them closer. But they weren't there at the birth site, okay? So block them out. And they don't belong there. So go home and move your wise men somewhere else, okay? I'm just encouraging you to do biblical things. All right. So then he's also going to say, hey, what's that? Oh, let's go back one slide. He's going to say, hey, what's that thing, that star-looking thing? Because he wasn't there. That's only when the wise men saw it. That's when they started their journey from Babylon. They saw the star, but wasn't at the birth site that we can, at least what the scriptures tell us, it wasn't necessarily there. Maybe that's when it started shining. We don't really know, but for sure in that form. So let's just block that thing out. And then he's going to say, hey, what about those guys on the left? He goes, I recognize them. They were there. They came to the birth site. Yeah, sure. But what are they holding there? They're animals. He goes, they weren't animals. Block those dudes out. Man, animals didn't come in because the Jewish people are a very cleanly people. They're not going to let animals in the birth site of a kid. They're going to get them out of there, right? They're very, very cleanly people. So there were no animals there. So now, you guys, where did it happen? So this is in a house, obviously, on this picture. Nice house. It wasn't born in a nice house, I'm telling you that much. So let's block that thing out. And here's what we're left with, okay? Now, we don't really know where he was born, right? Because it doesn't really say. It says they used a manger, a feeding trough for an animal. So you think it's probably in an animal kind of environment, right? But we don't actually know if it was in a cave, which would be typical where they put sheep, or if it was in a stable, which is not very typical for those days in the Middle East. They wouldn't have had a barn or a stable. Probably what they had, frankly, was the lower level of a house where they kept their cow. Sheep were usually outside. Cow is usually on the lower level. People lived on the upper level. And they kept that room that if there were visitors, they could clean it out a little bit, rake it out, get all the manure out, get everything out. And so when it says that Jesus came to the inn, we don't even know if there's an innkeeper. We'll cover that in a minute. And it just says they gave him somewhere else to be where there was a manger. Probably the lower level of a little house where they gave him. So what I want to do is kind of focus on these two groups. First of all, I want to talk a little bit about these shepherds. And it's really about, for those who are afraid, making room for God in the midst of a world where you are afraid. And where can you make room for God when you're afraid? And I want to just use this passage. In fact, you take Luke and Matthew together and you get the whole Christmas story. One by itself doesn't tell you the whole thing. But in Luke 2, look at this. It says this. In those days, a decree went out from Caesar Augustus that all the world should be registered. This was in the first registration when Quirinius was the governor of Syria. And all went to be registered, each of them to his own town. And Joseph went up from Galilee, from the town of Nazareth to Judea, to the city of David, which is called Bethlehem, because he was in the house and lineage of David, to be registered with Mary, his betrothed, who was with child. Verse 6. And while they were there, the time came for her to give birth. And she gave birth to her firstborn son, and wrapped him in swaddling clothes and laid him in a manger, because there was no place for them in the inn. Now, you guys, there's no innkeeper here, right? We've talked about the innkeeper. He's never mentioned. Never mentioned. It just says there's no room in the inn. We don't really know if there was a guy in charge, and he's like, hey, I'm sorry, I've given all the rooms out. I wish I could give you one. Or, oh my gosh, you're from Nazareth. Ooh, I don't really like you. There's no place for you to stay here. We don't really know what happened. There's no innkeeper. It just says there's no place in the inn. It's not like they had big Marriotts or anything like that. You know, they just had little places, you know, that maybe a room was available and there's no place for him. So it goes on and it says, in the same region, there were shepherds out in the field, keeping watch over their flock by night. And an angel of the Lord, one angel appears so far. And he doesn't have wings, just so you know. And the angel of the Lord appeared to them, and the glory of the Lord shone around them. And they were what? And they were great with fear. In the Greek, it says that they were frightened with a frightening of greatness. They were freaked out. They were blown away, right? I mean, it was like the glory of the Lord was shining around them. That's had to freak you out a little bit, right? You guys, I think they're freaked out for a lot of different reasons. One is they probably had never seen anything like this before. I think they sense that this clearly God is doing something here. And here's the deal. As a shepherd, they worked with animals all the time. And it made them categorically unclean. These men never had the right to ever go to the temple to worship. They were pushed a distance from that whole experience. For a Jew to go to the temple was the core of their worship. It was an incredible experience. It was beautiful in every way. And these men were always rejected. Never could go to the temple. And it's amazing to you, it's amazing to me, that God would choose to come and reveal himself in the glory that shone around them to these men who never got to be close to God. They were forgotten. They were the marginalized of the culture. You go, wow, that's who God decided to come to. And they were like freaked out. Oh my gosh, look at this. The glory of God is around us. And we are the ones that he is drawing close. That just kind of weirded you out a little bit. Because God, I want to put my arms around you guys. I want you to be the first ones to see Messiah. Wow. And it says this, and the angel said to them, don't be afraid. I know you have great fear. I know that there is a fear of a fearfulness that is great in you. But don't be afraid. The angel said, don't be afraid, for behold, I bring you good news of great joy that will be for all the people. Can you imagine all of a sudden you're the shepherd and you're the one who gets to tell everybody about this? It is for all the people. And you're like, holy cow, we get to be the announcers of this? Stunning. I'd be afraid too. Look at verse 11. For unto you is born this day in the city of David a Savior, who is Christ the Lord. And this will be a sign for you. And you will find a baby wrapped in swaddling clothes and lying in a manger. And suddenly there was with the angel a multitude of heavenly hosts praising God and saying, you guys, a multitude of heavenly hosts. It's a very biblical way of saying a pile of them, a bunch of them, an army of them, a battalion of angels were suddenly there. That would really freak you out, right? It would me. And it says that there were thousands of them. And they were announcing this and they were praising God to them, saying, glory to God in the highest, and on earth peace among those with whom he is pleased. I want to offer peace to those who give peace. To those whose hearts are bent towards me, I've come. And the glory of God in all of the highest is shining here. Wow. Look at verse 15. And when the angel went away from them into the heaven, the shepherds said to one another, hey, yo, what do you think? We ought to go. And so I think they delegated it to a few. And they said, let's roll. And they went. And I said, let's go over to Bethlehem and see this thing that has happened, which the Lord has made known to us. And they went with haste. That means they boogied. They got after it. They put the pedal to the metal. I mean, it was amazing, the pedal to the metal. And when they went with haste and found Mary and Joseph and the baby lying in a manger. And when they saw it, they made known the saying that had been told them concerning this child. The first evangelists were the shepherds. They're the ones who started this whole ball rolling. Wow. And all who heard it wondered at what the shepherds told them. But Mary treasured all these things, pondering them in her heart. Wow, she was quiet about it. Look in verse 20. And the shepherds returned, and I want to just highlight this, glorifying and praising God. You guys, their response to seeing Messiah was to worship him. It wasn't to put up lights. It wasn't to put up an autumn wreath. It wasn't to get busy with all the stuff of Christmas. It wasn't any of that. I don't know about you, but I really do love Christmas, but I also don't like Christmas. All the stuff just overwhelms me after a while. Putting up all the stuff and carrying boxes left and right. But I love the idea of coming into his presence and worshiping him, the Messiah, the King of Kings, the Lord of Lords. And if all that stuff gets in the way, I'd encourage you to go home today and take it down. Just take it down. Make sure you move the wise men over to the side. Take the animals off the nativity scene. Put them somewhere else. Take down all the stuff that's got in your way so you can experience the presence of God. Because here they were praising him for all that they had heard and seen as it had been told to them. And at the end of the 8 days, when he was circumcised, he was called Jesus, the name that was given by the angel before he was conceived in the womb way back. Wow. They enjoyed the presence of God. Well, you guys, let me just jump to another group quickly here. There's another group, these wise men. They did show up eventually, just so you know. A couple of years later, they show up. Look at this in Matthew 2. And this is the not yet. This group somehow had anticipated God coming, but they knew it wasn't quite yet, but they kept watching and waiting. They kept watching and waiting. So look at this. Now, after Jesus was born in Bethlehem of Judea in the days of Herod the king, Herod, an incredibly brutal person, the king of the area, the king of Israel, he was the one who eventually decided to murder every kid in Bethlehem under the age of two. Because he was afraid of a king usurping his power. And he comes in the days of Herod the king. Behold, wise men from the east came to Jerusalem, saying, where is he who is born king of the Jews? Now this is going to rock Herod's world, right? What do you mean, king of the Jews? That's me, he says. What do you mean someone else is king of the Jews? What are you talking about? Look at this. And he goes, for we saw his star that it rose, and have come to worship him. Herod is not a happy camper. But watch, he plays the game. When Herod the king heard this, he was troubled, and all Jerusalem with him, and assembling all the chief priests and scribes of the people, he inquired of them where the Christ was to be born, because he didn't know himself. He'd never read the scriptures. He had no idea. King of the Jews and never read the scriptures. Didn't understand that Micah had already said where he was going to be born 700 years before Christ came. He didn't understand that in the book of Numbers, even earlier than that, they had talked about the scepter of the king coming and being a part of it. He didn't know because he was a secular leader, not a spiritual leader. And so he gathers everybody together and says, hey, whoa, what's the deal, man? They're asking about the king of the Jews. What's going on here? And they said, and they told him out of the prophet Micah, in Bethlehem of Judea, for it was written by the prophets, and you, O Bethlehem, in the land of Judah, are by no means least among the rulers of Judah, for from you shall come a ruler who will shepherd my people Israel. He doesn't come to be a warrior. He came to be a shepherd. He will shepherd people. Herod wanted to be a warrior. The people of God will never be led by simply a warrior, but by a shepherd. When Jesus returns, he will return in an incredible way, but he will be a shepherd of his people. That's what he's called us to. You know, in a Christian church in recent years, there's been kind of an idol made of leadership. Everybody talks about leaders, 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 leaders. And very few people are talking about shepherds, 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 shepherds. I have a friend who's a professor at the seminary here in town, and he talked about the idol of leadership that is destroying the church. I thought, wow. And guess what? Jesus came to be a shepherd, to care for people deeply and long. I love that. Verse 7, when Herod summoned the wise men secretly and ascertained from them what time the star had appeared. When did you start seeing this thing? Verse 8, and when he sent them to Bethlehem, saying, go and search diligently for the child, and when you have found him, bring me word that I too may come and worship him. But after listening to the king, they went away, and behold, the star that they had seen when it rose went before them again until it came to rest over the place where the child was. And when they saw the star, look what they did. They rejoiced exceedingly with great joy. Wow. Look at this in verse 11. And going into the house, they saw the child and Mary his mother box this thing. And they fell down and they worshiped him. You guys, how'd they know about this anyway? How'd they know that that star meant anything? Well, you know what I think really happened is when God took Daniel in 600 BC to Babylon, he began to tell them about the coming of Messiah. And the magi, the wise men, the sorcerers of that day began to understand the gospel. And they passed it down for over 600 years. They shared it among themselves. And these men were looking for the King of Kings and Lord of Lords. They were looking for the Messiah. They had abandoned worshiping the King of Babylon, and they bought into worshiping the King of all creation. And they heard about his coming, and finally, in a generation, they saw this star. Whether it was an alignment of the planets or it was a special creation of God, I don't know. It doesn't tell us. But somehow they understood that is where Messiah is. And they came to find him. And they came with the intent of worshiping him. Can you imagine? These guys were intelligent, educated scholars of their day. And they came to worship. The same thing that these shepherds did. They came to worship. And then opening their treasures, they offered him gifts. Gold and frankincense and myrrh. Three of them. We have no idea if there's three kings. All we know is that there were three gifts. There could probably was a bunch of them. Because you don't come to worship a king with three dudes. You bring a lot of folk. All we know is that there were three gifts. So maybe what you want to do is take the wise men off your nativity and just put three gifts. Gold and frankincense and myrrh. You'll be more biblical that way. Good job. Okay. And being warned in a dream not to return to Herod, they departed to their own country by another way. Because this angel told them, Herod's not up to anything good. And Herod eventually organized the killing of children. It's called the murder of the children. That he killed every child in the Bethlehem area that were under 2 years old and had them all murdered. Because he was afraid that the King of Kings, the King of the Jews, was among them. Can you imagine the audacity? It's amazing. So what do we do with this? What are we going to do with all this? Well, let me just ask you a few questions. At this point in your life, are you afraid to make room for God? At this point in your life, are you afraid to make room for God? A little bit like the shepherds. They were afraid. They're a little concerned. They're a little overwhelmed. But what was their response? Their response was yes. Hey, you guys watch the sheep, man. We're headed over here to see Messiah. Let me ask you kind of a follow-up question. What's going on in your life that would make it awkward for you to invite God to join you? Is there anything going on in your life that you'd say, I can't make room for him. I can't invite him into this because I know what I'm doing is wrong. I know it's not honoring him. This would be really awkward to make room for him right here. And let me just encourage you, if that's true, invite him in anyway. Because he is the one that can help you clean out the room. He can deal with what's going on. Invite him in. Here's another question. Are there things in your past that make you feel like you can't imagine God accepting you? You know, those shepherds, they couldn't even imagine that God would appear to them. Because they were the low of the low. They couldn't even imagine it. Is there anything in your life from your past that you'd say, he could never touch this? Here's the deal, he can. Because he is a God of forgiveness. That's why Jesus came, right? He didn't come just to be born. He came to die. He came to go on a cross for my broken, sinful, messed up, wayward stupidity in my life. That's why he came. And I desperately needed him. Are there things in your past that are keeping you away from making room? Don't. It's exactly where he wants to come, right into that. Let me ask you another big question. At this point in your life, do you have a hard time believing that God is going to reveal himself and his plan? You see, those wise men, they had anticipated this for years, 600 years. And they hadn't seen it, but they kept looking and waiting. At this time in your life, are you having a hard time believing that God will reveal himself to you and his plan to you? And you want it right now or never going to come? Are you willing to be, well, let me ask the second question. Are you willing to be to patiently wait and diligently watch for what God is going to do? To hang in there through difficult times. Even when it's hard. Are you willing to hang in there? Watch for him. Anticipate his coming. Wait for him. Because when it happens, you'll come and you'll worship. Right? So, are you ready, willing to worship God both now and when he reveals himself and his plan? Are you willing to worship him now? It seems to me as we make room for him in our reality that he wants to come in even when we're afraid and even when we're waiting, and he will make himself real. Are you willing to make room for God? You guys, I'd like to invite the... We have our kids that are going to come forward. And this isn't just for a nice little picture show. You know, you bring the kids up on Christmas time and the nice little picture. They're going to come and sing a song for us. And they're going to sing a song that basically asks us, do we have room? And out of the mouths of children sometimes comes great wisdom. So I'd like you to invite our kids ministry in, because we want them to be a part of this thing and to lead us in worship.